T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
We're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Every score change during the Super Bowl, someone wins $50,000 in the Rocket Mortgage Super Bowl Squares sweepstakes. See rules and enter for free at rocketmortgagesquares.com. Hour 3, Maggie and Perloff. It was great talking to Jim Nance earlier. We'll bring back a little bit of that later on in the show. Having heated debate, Maggie thinks that Baker Mayfield has ulterior motives for getting off social media. If you can't trust Baker Mayfield, I don't know who we're going to trust.
Who can you trust? I think that this is part of the bigger Baker Mayfield machine. He's going into the last year of his deal, which is the contract year. They did pick up the option, so it'd be the fifth year. And he needs a rebranding, quite frankly, because his stock is pretty low right now. I think that the Browns are going to stick with him for one more year. I think that he emerges from this social media sort of isolation, and he comes out with a new diet, with a new quarterback coach, with a new something, and he rebrands himself as the new Baker Mayfield. The focused, it's all about just being the quarterback to me. Like, I don't know if he's going to still do the progressive commercials or any of that stuff. But
that's a huge problem. The guy is on more ads in playoff games where he's not playing. That's been the problem for Baker. He's gotten too much exposure in ads. And he's hysterical in those ads, by the way.
Yeah, he's great in the ads. But yes, there's, I think part of you starts to, the public maybe starts to turn on you just a little bit when they see you that often and they don't see you in the playoffs. Now, listen, he was coming off of a playoff appearance where the Browns not only break their playoff drought, but end up winning a game against the Steelers. So his stock couldn't have been higher there. I think what's interesting also, as we turn our attention to these next, the championship weekend and next week, as Baker Mayfield will not be playing in that game. I think what's interesting here is we mentioned Deebo Samuel was a full participant in practice.
Yep.
This is going to be about quarterbacks because obviously, there's a lot at stake here, like Joe Burrow ahead of schedule, Matthew Stafford, legacy stuff on the line, Mahomes just adding to his legacy, and there's just tons to unpack with all this Jimmy G, where's he going to be next year?
Yeah.
He's playing through injuries. But even beyond the quarterback questions, I feel like the wide receivers are the ones who are going to take the spotlight here.
Yeah. Oh, that's the big... is when you think about it, that's the big stars. I've seen this debate forming this week. If you could have any one of these four wide receivers, Tyreek Hill, Deebo Samuel, Cooper Kupp, or Ja'Marr Chase. Oof. And the funny thing is,
tough.
You would think, you have the AFC and NFC title games, it'd be easy to rank the receivers. It's an impossible assignment, Maggie. I'd love to see you figure it out.
Oh, man. I don't think I can.
I have a number one. I have a clear-cut number one.
Are we doing, like, if I'm starting a franchise,
This
guy moving forward, or just for this game on Sunday?
Either question is difficult to answer. Let's say if you're starting a franchise.
Starting a franchise, I tend to go with the youngest person, so that would be Chase.
Okay.
A franchise, I want the person who's going to be young and is really, obviously, knock on wood, good health. Not that any of these guys are old, but...
Well, yeah, I don't know. You would start, Tyreek Hill's 27.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's not old.
Cooper Kupp is really young. I'm not sure the age.
Come in here?
I don't know if you could do that. How old is Cooper Kupp? Cooper Kupp is 28. Cooper Kupp's older than Tyreek Hill. And yeah, so Ja'Marr Chase. Also, is Ja'Marr Chase's upside as high as Tyreek Hill?
I mean, I don't think Tyreek Hill is going to slow down at all, but that would be the one thing I would worry about because so much of his... success is obviously his speed. Look what he did to the Bills. I mean, he caught the ball at the 20 and put up deuces when he had three guys in front of him and still outran all of them.
I heard an analyst, I'm sorry, I can't remember who, said that Tyreek Hill is the most valuable non-quarterback in the NFL. And he's the most unique weapon. There's no doubt about it. There's nobody like Tyreek Hill. Cooper Kupp, amazing. Ja'Marr Chase, great. Deebo Samuel is a revelation this year.
26 years old for Deebo, by the way.
There's nobody like Tyreek Hill in the league.
No, but there have been games where he's just been out of it, whether it's either been because he's injured or something, where he's just not that effective. Like, and the Chiefs have still been able to win. I don't know if that's part of this debate.
Have there been any big games where they've won where it wasn't him and Kelsey? I can't remember. I feel like if they're going to win.
No, they obviously need a lot of Tyreek Hill, of course. Well, this would be an interesting question for our next guest, and we've got 1,000 questions for him, so let's get to it. Of course, joining the show now, Odyssey NFL insider Michael Lombardi, and insider calls are presented by BetQL. Get access to data and insights the sports books don't want you to see. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today. You can also hear Michael on the GM Shuffle, his weekly podcast available on the Odyssey app. He does that podcast with Adnan Virk. They do a fantastic job. It's a must listen for me. Mike Lombardi, welcome to the show. Good to talk to you, buddy.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you having me.
No, believe me, this is like the time of year we really want to talk to you because it's on the field stuff and it's front office stuff too, and obviously former general manager that you are. But let's answer our question that Perloff and I have just been batting around, which is of the four big wide receivers playing in the championship round this weekend, Deebo Samuel, Cooper Kupp, Tyreek Hill, Ja'Marr Chase, who would you take if you were starting a franchise?
Oh, wow. You know, Deebo's so versatile, but I think I'd go with Chase. I mean, what he's been able to do as a rookie, you know, the one thing about Chase is he's dynamic with the ball in his hands. Like Deebo, he can get down the field. He's really a great jump ball receiver. I think the one thing we often overlook about great receivers is they have great balance. You know, it's like Charles Barkley led the NBA in rebounds at 6'4 and a half. He's not really 6'6". But he led the NBA in rebounding because he has great balance. He can always jump on the right foot in balance to go get the ball. And nowadays, because most every receiver is technically covered, you know, it's like Parcells used to tell Phil Sims, hey, Phil, Bavaro's open even when he's covered. Well, most receivers are covered, you know, now because they're so close. And whoever jumps for the ball or makes the play on a 50-50 ball becomes the better player. So Chase has been dynamic in that, and not that the other guys aren't, but I think Chase is kind of, as a rookie, has been exceptional.
There seemed like there was a trend, Mike, where there were all the great receivers were kind of going in the second and third round. Like, you didn't need to do a top 10 pick on a receiver. It was Cooper Kupp, Tyreek Hill, Deebo Samuel, I believe. I don't think any of them are first round picks. So I actually thought when the Bengals took that, I'm like, do they really need to take a receiver that high when you can maybe find one in the second round? Is this going to change the way people are drafting this year? Or are we going to see wide receivers go higher?
I mean, look, the Hall of Fame is filled with receivers that don't belong. Most NFL draft boards are filled with receivers that can't play. I mean, it's really, we just watched the playoff game where San Francisco beat Green Bay with the best quarterback in the league because their defensive line dominated. You know, I was all over the Bengals for taking Chase. I thought they should have taken Sewell. And when I watched their tape last weekend against Tennessee, I was reinforced that they're one of the worst offensive lines I've seen on tape all year. I mean, they're literally have a hard time. If they could get the defense to count to five Mississippi, they would be better. I mean, they just, it's a gate. And so, yeah, you know, it looks good and the media loves it because Chase is so good, but the quarterback's taking way too many hits. And the game is still won by offensive linemen, defensive linemen, and who controls the trenches. So I don't think so. Look, Samuel's a third. I mean, Tyreek Hill, let's just put this out there. Tyreek Hill is only a sixth-round pick because of his behavior off the field. Mm-hmm. If you watched Oklahoma State, he was a running back. He was a dynamic, explosive, powerful running back that they did a great job in turning into a receiver. He caught a lot of passes. He wasn't a secret. It was his behavior that eliminated people from drafting him.
Mike Lombardi is our guest. We're going through some of the big wide receivers we're going to see in the championship game. Want to get your thoughts on a couple other big things happening in the NFL right now, Mike, and obviously Sean Payton stepping back. Want to give you credit. The first time I heard that there were rumors about Payton taking a step back was on your GM Shuffle podcast. It was like 2 weeks ago. But considering the Dallas connections, how should Mike McCarthy be feeling right now? Maybe not this year, Mike, but going into 2023, do you think that Sean Payton and the Cowboys is just a fait accompli?
Well, I mean, look, there is a relationship, and you better acknowledge it. Jerry Jones and Sean Payton have a friendship, and they have a relationship. There's no getting around it. And for Mike to deny it or to not even acknowledge it, he's wrong. And look, Mike has to produce. I mean, Mike had a great regular season. He had a disaster in the offseason. He had a lot of inconsistencies. And his owner came out and said that he didn't fix the problems during the season, which is really a good comment by Jerry. That's the job of a head coach. Whatever your problems are, you fix it as the year goes along. It's one of the reasons why I didn't understand how anybody could vote for Matt LaFleur for Coach of the Year. Yeah, I know he was 13-3, but his special teams were bad week one. They were worse by week 17.
Like, it cost him a game.
Job to fix it? Yep. Yeah. And I kept saying on my podcast, I kept saying on VSiN, they're going to lose a game because of the kicking game. I mean, it was just so obvious. But he never fixed it. How do you vote for him for Coach of the Year? And that's what Jerry was saying about McCarthy. McCarthy's got to get his act going or else Sean Payton will be back in the league. I think Sean definitely is going to take this year off. From what I've been told, he's exhausted. He needs to recharge his batteries. I definitely feel like a year away, whether he goes to television or does something, would be good for him, the pressure off him. But I do think come 2023, I think he's going to be one of the hottest coaches in the league.
Mike, another topic we kind of were inspired by the GM shuffle to discuss was the GMs coming in. They're kind of younger guys. Are we seeing a shift in the power balance between GMs and coaches? Are owners bringing in analytics guys who are then, like baseball, going to use the coach as more of a puppet to instill analytics? Is that trend coming to football as well?
I think it's here. I mean, you can't deny it. We have devalued the head coach. I just went on a rant about LaFleur. He doesn't coach special teams. He doesn't coach the defense. He calls plays, and people think he's a tremendous head coach. You know, it's like he's got Aaron Rodgers. What would he do if he was a Tennessee coach in that team? So we have devalued it, and we're now into the analytics. I'm not anti-analytics. I think I have a hard time that analytics is going to tell me a player's got great toughness. I think it's going to be hard for me to learn competitiveness from analytics. I think it's going to be hard for me to learn work habits from analytics. Now, if you want to measure the broad jump and measure the 40 time as it relates to this number and the turn and all that, I'm all for it. Go ahead, do it, knock it out. But at some point, production matters. I mean, have you gone through some of those analytical grades posted by the college guys at Pro Football Focus?
Mm-hmm.
Go through it. Tell me what you think on that. Tell me how that works out. Because I have. And I'm not saying we don't make mistakes in scouting. We do. We blow it. If you're 75% accurate as a college scout, you're doing really well. But you need to be able to use it as one piece of the pie, not the entire pie like Minnesota's going to do. Cleveland did this a couple of years ago with Sashi Brown. You know, they didn't draft Deshaun Watson. They were the team that traded Deshaun Watson to Houston, just FYI. And they were an analytically based team.
I'm curious, Mike. Ryan Poles, who the Bears hired as GM, I think he's in his late 30s. Is he
36.
Is he going to have real power? Say they hired, I'll throw a name out, Dan Quinn, former coach. Like, I feel like Dan Quinn comes in and he's sort of the man. I know the balance is probably different in every team, but it doesn't feel like a GM is going to boss Dan Quinn around, especially a first-time GM. Or am I being naive?
No, I think you're right. Look, where is Dan Quinn going to get help and counsel from Ryan Poles?
I don't know where.
A lot of the job of the GM is to help the coach. Is to walk into his office and say, hey, I think we should think about something like this. Like, you and I are attached to the hip. And if we don't get this worked out, it's going to be hard. Like, who's going to help him with that? Like, being a first-time general manager is the hardest job. It really is. And it's not about finding a player in the sixth round. That's not. That's a director of player personnel or director of college scouting. The general manager, the new general manager of the Giants or the Bears, their job is to build the vision for the organization, to then take that blueprint and then build a grading system that adheres to that blueprint and go find players. We're not doing that now. That was back in the, you know, when George Young showed up, that was back in a different era. We're not in that era anymore. We've changed completely. And the league's going to continue to change that way as it goes on because I think that there's a whole movement towards this.
I know I think Mike Lombardi is our guest, of course, the Odyssey NFL insider, but I think it's an easy sell to an owner because you have, for the most part, they're businessmen who are looking for edges or have found an edge that has made them a billionaire or they zagged when everybody zigged or something like that. And so they're sold on young, full of info that's going to get you an edge that no one else is going to have. And I think it's like it's too tantalizing to pass on, you know, and then there's the copycat element, which we're definitely seeing now. You know, Mike, want to get your thoughts on Aaron Rodgers because, you know, he's talking about how he's going to take time now and decide whether or not, first of all, he wants to keep doing this. And then after all, you know, all that, he said it's exciting to kind of not know what's next for him. Do you see a lot of viable options for Rodgers outside of Green Bay? If so, what are some teams you think would be in play for Rodgers?
Well, I think every team. I mean, the line to get a good quarterback in the National Football League might be longer than the line to get a New York City driver's license. I mean, it's huge. I mean, like, there's a lot of teams looking for it. And he's going to be, if he comes back, he's going to be a $50 million a year player. You're going to have to redo the contract.
Right.
I mean, you're going to have to do that. And then you're also going to have to make sure the team around him is what he wants. So I don't know the answer to that. I know there'll be a lot of teams with their hand out, and I'm sure the Packers are going to want to have, you know, they're going to want to get compensated for a player, even though he's older. He's a two-time MVP. I mean, you're not going to give him away for a second-round pick. I mean, so it's going to be, it's a tough road for the Packers to navigate, because the other part of this is everybody's going to, if they get rid of him or he leaves, is Jordan Love ready to take over this team? That's going to be a hard question, and it's going to be difficult for them to answer.
Mike, it's January 26th. How come we don't have any head coaches yet? What's going on here? Is there a reason this year feels slow?
I think what Maggie said earlier about the owners wanting to have us, you know, they're older, they use this. I think a lot of this is, and I say this all the time, there's a great scene in The Sopranos where Jimmy Altieri's they're talking about who's going to run the company, and Jimmy Altieri says, "This, you know, we need a supreme commander. This isn't the Dave Clark Five." Well, what we've got in the NFL is we've got the Dave Clark Five. We've got a lot of people that want involvement that don't know anything about football. And the more people you have involved, the less effective you are making decisions. And that's what's going on. So you've got this word, and it's the ugliest word in the NFL. It's called collaboration. The Bears used it for the last 5 years. Oh, we're collaborating on Mitchell Trubisky. Everybody agreed, you know. That's perfect. Yeah, how'd that work out for you?
Yeah, but look what happened to Jimmy Altieri. He got shot, though, so I don't know.
He went the other way, though. I mean, Jimmy was a rat, so they had to take care of him. But he had a great point. I mean, he had a great point. The NFL is still a supreme commander league. Now, we have splintered it to the point where we have a lot of people collaborating, and we're going to reach a consensus decision, which is just wonderful in theory. It doesn't work.
Mike, last question I have for you. It's about something you said again on the GM shuffle, which is about the Belichick assistants and why they tend to fail so often when they get away from New England. And what you said I thought was interesting, which was, do these assistants even have any idea what Bill Belichick does? You know, do you think that we're going to see the Belichick tree start to sort of, you know, dissipate a little bit, you know, where teams aren't going to just be so eager to try to find out what the secret sauce is in New England?
Yeah, no, I think the secret sauce in New England is him. And people try to, that are there, they really don't understand what he does. And then they try to emulate him in a fashion that's really not emulating him. I mean, Joe Judge's rant after the Chicago game was anti-Belichick. I mean, Belichick would have never done that.
No.
And so to me, you know, they don't really understand the whole picture. They get a piece of the pie, but they don't. And I also think the biggest mistake a lot of them make is they don't remember what happened in Cleveland. Cleveland allowed New England to be so successful. But because that Cleveland experience gets wrapped, well, because of the mistakes we made. Mm. And you grow from them and you learn. And if you don't make those mistakes and you don't learn from them, then when you get a chance, you don't understand why you're doing it. It's like, look, we can go online and steal anybody's recipes and open up a restaurant down the street, and we'll be out of business in 2 years because we don't understand how it got together. Well, that's the same thing. If you don't understand the formula for what he's doing, it's hard to do it. And when problems creep in like they do, you don't know how to solve them.
Mike, is there an example you have of that, like a mistake that you guys made in Cleveland that you think Belichick, like you can draw a direct line that he fixed it and it was responsible for winning in New England?
Easy. You know, we hired an offense when he came into when he came to Cleveland. His theory was, let's hire this veteran offensive line coach, and we weren't going to hire Kirk Ferentz. He took the University of Maine job. After 2 years, we decided it's a lot easier to train coaches than to retrain coaches. So we brought Kirk back in from Maine, and we became a much better offensive line. And from that point forward, Bill has always developed coaches from within. But when these coaches leave to go somewhere else, they don't do that because they don't know how to develop the coach from within. And so they have a bunch of guys that are not used to the program. they're not comfortable within the program. They don't understand the rules of the program. They don't understand how the program was made. And they get a lot of people complaining. Oh, it's too hard. He's working us too much. I can't stand it. Well, when you're only trained one way, that's all you know. That's the, one of the biggest problems.
Very interesting. Mike, appreciate your perspective as always. As I said, love the GM shuffle, and we'll hope to talk to you again soon. Enjoy championship weekend.
Thanks so much.
Appreciate you. That was Odyssey NFL Insider Michael Lombardi. Insider calls are presented by BetQL. BetQL is here to help us all make better bets through real, proven analytics. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today. You can also hear Mike on GM Shuffle, his weekly podcast available on the Odyssey app with Adnan Virk.
So you learned something about your nemesis, Bill Belichick there, how it works.
I know, but again, like, can't find a way to beat him.
Learn from your mistakes. The Bills made a couple mistakes. Maybe they will learn and get better. Well, be optimistic, Maggie.
It's funny because the Bills are probably going to have to be hiring from within very soon, or developing from within very soon, because I have a feeling that their offensive coordinator, Brian Daboll, could be headed to the New York Giants, as the New York Giants introduced Joe Shane today as their general manager and said, the owner of the Giants said, we have failed Daniel Jones every way possible. So I don't know if that means now it's time to make things right with Daniel Jones, or if they would still be looking on the outside to make a big trade for a Russell Wilson or something like that. All very interesting. Coming up next, so much more to get into today. We haven't even gotten to what we saw on the court last night. We haven't even gotten to, oh my gosh, the Travis Kelce sound. We've got so much to do. Jim Nantz later on in the hour. It's Maggie and Perloff. Don't move. CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back. It's time to answer our Ask the Pros questions of the day, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Today's question is from Marcus in Louisville. Today marks the 2-year anniversary of Kobe's tragic death. What was your favorite memory of Kobe? Don't forget, you can submit a question by going to CBSSportsRadio.com/AskThePros or tweeting it at CBS Sports Radio using the hashtag AskThePros. Wow, 2 years ago, I was down on Miami Beach when stuff came into my phone. I didn't believe it was real, by the way. It was impossible. It was an impossible moment to sort of grasp, but it feels like it was yesterday, too.
Man, the gravity of that, like, is still in some ways, like, hasn't really set in.
Right.
The full tragedy of that and all the people who were on that helicopter the families who were impacted is just so sad. But if we're talking about Kobe memories, you know, there's a million you can go to, obviously, from his Laker days. But can I set up one that is a little unique and a little bit different? And it actually is the first, my favorite and first thing I think about with Kobe. So let me set this up for a sec. So I was working for Westwood One at the 2004 Olympics in Athens. And I was working very low level, like getting coffee for everyone, basically. I was still in college, and it was super fun. But I was in Athens, and that was one of the most disappointing U.S. men's basketball teams in recent history.
Did they? So they were like,
they got the bronze medal. It was awful. Like, by Team USA standards, it was terrible. You know, you're losing to Argentina, you lose to Puerto Rico. It was bad. So in 2008, when Team USA went to Beijing, you could really tell there was a lot on this team. They hadn't been embarrassed in the last Olympic cycle, and now they were back, and they were in the gold medal game against Spain. Now, I was also, at that time, working for MLB.com, and I was doing game recaps and highlights till all hours of the morning, like waiting until, you know, Mariners, you know, had to play the Padres, and you're not getting out till 3 o'clock Eastern time, and, like, it was I was bleary-eyed. I remember getting home, and the gold medal game was, like, at the half. And
so it's in Beijing, so it's sort of 12 hours.
It was
hours
in the middle of the night. It was total opposite hours. And so I was just getting home from work. I was living on the Lower East Side with, like, a roommate. Like, I wasn't married. I mean, it was just like a totally different time in my life, working these crazy hours at MLB.com. And I turned on the gold medal game, and I remember watching this game, and it goes into the fourth quarter, and, like, Spain has USA on the ropes. And I believe it was they were up 2 with, like, 8 minutes to go, and they started to pull a little bit, and then Spain came back, and it was like 3 minutes left to go, and it was like Spain and USA neck and neck, and Kobe took over this game. It was like, it didn't matter who else was on the team. It was like, this is not going to happen again. Team USA is not going to get embarrassed again. That Spanish team was super talented, and Kobe took this game over. He finished with like 20 points, but he had bucket after bucket in crunch time. And weirdly, I know there's so many Lakers things I could point to, but oddly, that's the one I go to first.
No, I'm sure Kobe was incredibly proud. I know he loved international basketball. That's a great memory. I'm going, actually, I'm going to start with a negative memory that in my mind defined Kobe. Remember the airball game? I think it was against the Jazz at the playoffs. Yeah. Three or four airballs in a row. I'm looking up, it was 1997. He was a rookie and he could not hit the rim.
Yep.
And I was tuned in because I knew Kobe. I went to the same high school. So I rooted for him that year. And I'm like, oh, my God, he's a failure. Lower Merion, our pride and joy, Kobe Bryant is going to be a failure. I think 9 out of 10 players, that would have stuck with them and made them a worse player. Kobe came back and was incredible after that. How do you do that? How do you airball 4 balls in a row, come back and be the most confident player, the kind of player that can lead a team to a gold medal? I thought it was incredible. Later on, he cited that as a turning point of his career. Like, basically, it's a lesson, like, adversity breeds amazingness. Like, all these guys, like, Jordan has his May JV. That was Kobe's, like, moment. The fact that he was so special that he could turn that into a positive was incredible to me. I didn't mention that when I played him in half court, by the way, which I mentioned all the time.
I know, which you've mentioned a few times, but that story never gets old, because how many of us could ever say that we took a court with the future Hall of Famer and,
yeah,
you know, and one of the greatest players of all time?
I didn't do well.
Yeah, that's obvious.
Yeah.
But Nobody thought you were going to win.
He was young, too.
He's eight and just torching you.
Yeah, it is really interesting. But, you know, we recently talked to Mike Sielski, the Philadelphia Inquirer, who wrote the book about Kobe Bryant and Lower Merion. I wonder if that's going to be a movie.
The origin story of Kobe.
The origin story, because it's incredible. Like, we know the fully developed Kobe, but we saw him. I don't know if you remember in high school when he chose this. You probably don't remember.
I do. I remember we went to the prom with Brandy.
Yeah, like, we knew his whole life story, which is why it really, like, it felt like he was about to hit a new chapter when he died. It felt like this incredible life was about to get more incredible. So it felt like, in addition to, of course, losing a great player, we were robbed of seeing what he was going to do next.
We've hit the bottom of the hour. Coming up next, CBS Sports lead analyst Jim Nantz is going to join us. We're going to preview a little of the AFC Championship game and so much more. It's time for a CBS Sports update. Here's our buddy Rich Ackerman.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.